Like you see on the mob, right? You see the mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
Yeah, why? Why would you take the Fifth Amendment? Let's keep that clip handy for the next few weeks and months, shall we, Des?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
It may keep me useful.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in Red Bluff and Redding, California on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, Columbus, Ohio's WGRN. Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe on the internet on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and all your favorite podcast sites except for Spotify. Blanketing Planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for whatever may happen that we call the Bradcast. Good to have you here. And the reason I say whatever may happen is because, I don't really know. We have been dealing with a mess for the past, 24 hours or so, Desi Doyen?
Yes, every small business owner's nightmare.
Yeah, really, no kidding. A server outage at bradblog.com prevented us from posting yesterday's fantastic program with Randall Eliason until this morning at I was up at the crack of whatever dawn, but I don't even know what time it got posted. Finally got it posted. Finally got our Green News Report up and out. And then, we have to do a whole show today, don't we?
Oh, yeah, there's that too.
So there may be some more downtime in the coming days. The server outage had to do with I'm told that there is a server as part of our server array that is dying or is in the process of dying. And that means it's going to have to be replaced and fixed, and a bunch of stuff is going to have to be moved. So
much fun ahead.
There may be more downtime at bradblog.com in the days ahead. Now, we were going to take off President's Day anyway coming up, as we are being preempted here at KPFK that day for special Black History Month programming, which is fine. But there may be more time off than that as we try to figure all of this out. Also, today is our Green News Report's 13th anniversary, Desi Doyen.
I know.
Happy anniversary. So we really wanted to get up on air today by hook or by crook, at least to celebrate that much, despite how grim today's Green News Report actually is. Sorry about that, as usual. But yeah, we welcome your donations to both celebrate hashtag GNR13 or just to help us with unexpected costs now to finally try and get this server problem fixed. But hey, our podcast stayed up the whole time, even when the blog did not. So if you come by bradblog.com these days and it is down for any period of time for any reason and you're looking for the latest Bradcast, you can check out your favorite podcast site. Hopefully the show will be there even if it's not at bradblog.com. So Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, all of those, it should be there. But not Spotify. But I'll get to them in a second. Nonetheless, all of this is to say I've been a little distracted over the past 24 hours, so forgive us if we're a little sloppier than usual today. We've got some breaking news to get to and some stories that I've been trying to get to over the last day or three. But you know what? Maybe being sloppy and making it up as we go will help us win a huge Spotify contract for hundreds of millions of dollars, because they seem to like spotty, sloppy, unverified, just make crap up as you go stuff. That's the business model for their streaming service, apparently. And on a related note, this just broke shortly before air via the New York Times, which I'm happy about, because I wanted to mention a thing or two on this whole Joe Rogan thing that I hadn't gotten a chance to adequately address. But Des, you thought this was, I think I mentioned it once, but worth repeating, I think. This from the New York Times, they say, it was the deal that helped make Spotify a podcasting giant, but has now put the company at the center of a fiery debate about misinformation and free speech. Spotify was already the king of music streaming, they note. Well, how did they get there, by the way? By paying the artists of that music way less than they deserved. But to help propel the company into its next phase as an all-purpose audio juggernaut and further challenge Apple and Google, Spotify wanted a superstar podcaster. Now, of course, they didn't call me. I don't know what happened there. But in May of 2020, after an intense courtship, the Times reports Spotify announced a licensing agreement to host Joe Rogan's show exclusively. Although reported then to be worth over $100 million, the true value of the deal that was negotiated at the time, which covered 3.5 years, was actually at least $200 million, with the possibility of more, according to two people familiar with the details of the transaction, yada yada. But in recent weeks, the show that helped Spotify catapult into a market leader for podcasts has also placed it at the center of the sort of cultural storm that has long engulfed Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube over questions about the responsibility that tech behemoths have for their content on their platforms. And I just wanted to note this because, I think I took a moment or so to say nobody, no talker on the airwaves or on the YouTubes or wherever, or on the Spotify's, wherever they are, is worth $100 million. I don't care if, Albert Einstein came back from the dead and wanted
Jesus?
Jesus wanted an hour-long podcast every day. He would not be worth $100 million, much less $200 million.
May I add, $200 million or $100 million that was made on the labor of musicians and artists?
Not only that, which is bad enough, but the idea that any company has that kind of money to spend for someone to talk about stuff that apparently they're just making up, conversation they're making up. Oh, are you available to come on and be my guest and talk about crap, even though it has nothing to do with reality, even though I haven't done any research at all? Come tell me about your crap. Come lie on my program. That's what Joe Rogan does. He's welcome to do that. Where it becomes a problem for me is that it helps to kill people because he's giving out misinformation regarding COVID. So I object. I guess he's welcome to do it. We're also welcome to walk away from Spotify. But the notion that a company has that much extra money that they can afford to pay one guy to come on and jibber-jabber for an hour or so means that, guess what? Taxes are way, way too low for corporations like Spotify. That they have that much extra money sitting around. I'm sure Joe Rogan would have been delighted with a $10 million contract for a year. But $100 million? $200 million? Are you kidding me? Raise their taxes. All right, just wanted to get that out of my system. And in some less maddening breaking news just before airtime, in fact, some great breaking news just before airtime. Hopefully you caught our conversation about much of this on our previous broadcast, if you were able to get it from the website in any event, with former assistant U.S. attorney and white collar crime legal expert and law professor at George Washington University School of Law, Randall Eliason. But good news in the follow-up. Donald Trump and his kids must sit down to answer questions from the New York State Attorney General under oath. The New York State AG, who is investigating all of them for bank, tax, and insurance fraud. I told you this was not going to end well for them, even if it's still going to take a while before they get all of the comeuppance that they so richly deserve. But here's the breaking news via AP this afternoon. Former President Donald Trump must answer questions under oath in New York State's civil investigation into his business practices. A judge ruled on Thursday. Judge Arthur Engoron ordered Trump and his two eldest children, Ivanka and Donald Trump Jr., to comply with subpoenas issued in December by New York Attorney General Letitia James. Trump and his two children must sit for a deposition within 21 days, the judge said. Judge Engoron issued the ruling after a two-hour hearing with lawyers for the Trumps and with James's office. Writing in his decision, Engoron said, quote, "In the final analysis, a state attorney general commences investigating a business entity, uncovers copious evidence of possible financial fraud, and wants to question under oath several of the entity's principals, including its namesake. She has the clear right to do so." Of course, AP goes on to note, because it's Trump and this is all about delay, 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 that the ruling is almost certain to be appealed. But if upheld, it could force the former president into a tough decision about whether to answer questions or stay silent, citing his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. That's right. A former president of the United States is now forced to decide whether he wants to plead the Fifth to protect himself against potential civil and criminal liability. Because remember, as we discussed with Eliason yesterday, the Manhattan DA is also looking at many of the very same things that the state attorney general is looking at in her civil investigation. But the Manhattan DA has a criminal probe into these same fraudulent practices that could result in Trump or his kids going to prison for their fraud. In the civil case, it's financial penalties and so forth. The company could lose its license to do business, et cetera, et cetera. In the criminal case, they're potentially looking at jail time. Spokespeople for Trump did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the ruling. But of course, you know Trump will, and he'll probably say something just as stupid and just as damning as he has already said, as he always says whenever he opens up his mouth on this stuff, as he did after his accountants at Mazars USA disowned him essentially this week, said we can no longer work with you, said that we have a conflict of interest, which everyone believes to mean that Mazars is now cooperating with the prosecutors. And so disregard that 10 years of financial statements we helped you with because we don't believe those are accurate anymore based on the information we have since learned. When that statement came out, Trump then came out with a statement showing how much he knows about his finances, which, in fact, as Letitia James pointed out, contradicted his own lawyer's pleadings the day earlier, when he said, he doesn't know anything about the financials. He shouldn't be made to sit down and answer questions about the business. He's the executive. How does he know anything about the numbers? Of course, he came out and, you know, detailed all of the numbers that he does know. So, oops. Attorney General James said her investigation has uncovered evidence that Trump's company used, quote, fraudulent or misleading valuations of assets like golf courses, skyscrapers, etc., to get loans and tax benefits. If Trump were to testify in the civil probe, as looks to absolutely now be the case, he could anything that he says could then be used against him in the concurrent criminal investigation being overseen by the Manhattan DA. Trump, yes, could invoke his Fifth Amendment right to remain silent in a deposition, but that is something he has criticized others for doing in the past.
Have you seen what's going on in front of Congress? Fifth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Fifth Amendment. Horrible. Horrible.
When you have your staff taking the Fifth Amendment, taking the Fifth, so they're not prosecuted, I think it's disgraceful.
Like you see on the mob, right? You see the mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
I don't know. Very good question, Donald Trump. Are you going to take the Fifth Amendment? I suspect you will before all of this is said and done. In a statement on Tuesday, Trump railed against what he called a sham investigation of a great company that has done a spectacular job for New York and beyond. And he described it as a racially motivated continuation of a witch hunt, the likes of which has never been seen in this country before.
You know, it's funny he keeps calling these racially motivated because, surprise, all of the district attorneys who are investigating just happened to be black.
They are now. They weren't until the beginning of the year.
And he didn't say that before the beginning of the year.
He did not say that. Now that Alvin Bragg, who is black, replaced Cyrus Vance as the Manhattan DA, now
suddenly,
Donald Trump is playing the race card. Letitia James, of course, is having none of it. She tweeted, "Breaking. Today, a court ruled in our favor that Donald Trump must appear before my office as part of our investigation into his financial dealings. No one will be permitted to stand in the way of the pursuit of justice, no matter how powerful they are. Donald Trump, Donald Trump Jr., and Ivanka Trump must all comply with this court order and testify before my office within 21 days. No one is above the law," the attorney general tweeted, hopefully catching the attention of the U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland. Another lawyer for Trump argued at Thursday's hearing that James's investigation is, quote, selective prosecution, and that the attorney general is, quote, engaging in viewpoint discrimination motivated by her political ambitions and disdain for the Republican former president. Look, as we mentioned yesterday, this guy lied over and over again in his financial statements. He, for example, claimed that his 11,000 square foot Trump Tower penthouse was actually 30,000 square feet, which I know seems like a small matter, but it isn't. Trump's own chief financial officer, who has already been indicted in the DA's criminal probe, Alan Weisselberg, conceded that that estimate alone meant that Trump's net worth was off by, quote, give or take $200 million just by inflating the size of his penthouse. In a court filing this week, James included a letter from Trump's longtime accounting firm, Mazars, advising him to no longer rely on years of their financial statements that they prepared on his company's valuations, given the questions about the accuracy last summer, spurred by evidence uncovered in James's civil investigation. The Manhattan DA office charged Weisselberg and the Trump Organization with tax fraud, alleging that Weisselberg himself collected more than $1.7 million in off-the-books compensation. They have both the company and Weisselberg have pleaded not guilty. Judge Engoron previously sided with James on other matters relating to the probe, including making Eric Trump testify after his lawyers had abruptly canceled a scheduled deposition. That didn't work. Eric had to testify, and now so do Ivanka and Don Jr. and Donald Trump himself. So it's going to take a while, but justice is coming for this guy. Now, when we spoke with Randall Eliason, he didn't want to predict it, and I usually don't make predictions either, but there are just too many walls closing in and collapsing on this guy and his phony empire built on lies and lies and more lies. Oh, and things aren't going any better for him in Washington, D.C. either, in the probe of his attempt to steal the 2020 election, which culminated in the deadly January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, which a majority of U.S. senators, including 9 Republican senators during his impeachment trial, all agree that, yes, Donald Trump incited. I didn't get to this yesterday, but I think it's worth noting as all of this moves forward. This week, President Biden tossed out Trump's efforts to shield records of who visited the White House on January 6 of last year. White House counsel Dana Remus sent a letter to the National Archivist telling him that Biden was rejecting Trump's executive privilege claim over the visitor's log, which the House January 6 committee is seeking in their investigation into the attack. The Remus pointed out that the Biden administration voluntarily releases its White House visitor logs. No subpoenas necessary. They do it as a, quote, matter of policy, as did the Obama administration, because apparently, unlike Trump, and I should note, by the way, George W. Bush prior to Obama, it seems that, you know, Biden and Obama, they have nothing to hide, at least in who comes and goes from the White House. The White House attorney wrote to the archivist, quote, the majority of the entries over which the former president has asserted executive privilege would be released, would be publicly released under current policy. As practice under that policy demonstrates, preserving the confidentiality of this type of record generally is not necessary to protect long-term institutional interests of the executive branch. So that material is also now being released. No, Donald Trump is not getting any help from the White House on that either. So there's some more good accountability news today for our disgraced former president. And though I have been trying for about 2 weeks to get to this this aspect of the story unsuccessfully, Trump's dumb kids have dragged his company back into an investigation that the Trump Organization had figured out how to get out of, back into an investigation by the D.C. Attorney General into what went on with all of those millions of dollars that were collected during the 2016 inauguration scam. Yes, they could still be in trouble for that as well, just to give you an idea of how long some of this stuff actually does take. This is an investigation of the, well, the 2017 inauguration after the 2016 election that the D.C. Attorney General is still working through, is still going to court regarding, still pre-trial. So the backstory first on what happened this week, the backstory from mid-January via the Daily Beast, former President Donald Trump and his family company have a long history of stiffing contractors, but there's one bill they almost certainly wish they had paid. Ahead of the 2017 presidential inauguration, the Trump Organization reserved a block of rooms at the Lowe's Madison Hotel. But when at least 13 people didn't show up, the Trump Organization refused to pay the bill. Something that's done many times in the past, the Daily Beast notes. The company then dodged a credit collection agency for the bill and eventually squirmed out of it by pushing nearly $50,000 bill these 13 people at this Lowe's Madison Hotel had owed. They didn't show up, and the Trump Organization said, well, they couldn't make it. We're not paying for it.
Yeah,
$50,000. Sorry,
you can't get away with that if you tried it.
So what they did was the Trump Organization ended up pushing it off, as the collections agency was trying to get it from them, pushing it off to the nonprofit Presidential Inauguration Committee. The Presidential Inauguration Committee, the PIC, as they call it, that dodged payment is now at the crux of the Attorney General for the District of Columbia's latest effort to put the Trump Organization back into the crosshairs in his ongoing investigation into how the Trump kids used the Presidential Inauguration Committee to throw lavish parties of their own. Stephanie Winston Wolkoff, who coordinated inaugural events for Trump and is now the government's lead witness in this case, said, quote, it was their friends. It should never have been sent to the PIC. That's misuse of funding. The Trump Organization being involved in any way in getting the Presidential Inauguration Committee to pay any sort of balance anywhere on their behalf, it just doesn't seem legitimate, Winston Wolkoff said. Now, she was close to the family for more than a decade and eventually became trusted advisor to First Lady Melania Trump. There was a fallout after Winston Wolkoff felt that the Trump White House had blamed her, made her the scapegoat for misspending during the inauguration. You may recall this. The New York Times identified a company she was associated with as the recipient of some $26 million. And Winston Wolkoff later overcame DOJ resistance, Trump's DOJ, naturally, to publication of her tell-all book called Melania and Me, in which she basically says she was set up for all of this. They said all this missing money, oh, that went to her. So the D.C. Attorney General here, Carl Racine, was continuing to investigate how all of this money that was, you know, should have been paid by the Trump Organization ended up being paid by the Presidential Inauguration Committee. And there's a whole backstory here where the collections agency was trying to get the money from the Trump Organization and they just wouldn't pay up. And eventually the Trump Organization said, go get it from the inaugural committee. Well, someone at the collection agency has now explained all of that to the D.C. Attorney General to explain that the reason it was paid for was because the Trump Organization themselves ordered the inaugural committee to pay for it. So in the meantime, with all of that backstory, last year, the Trump Organization had been trying to get out of this case being brought against them and others by the D.C. Attorney General, and the Trump Organization was sued and was successfully dropped from this case. They said, we have nothing to do with it. Well, the D.C. Attorney General disagreed. He got all of that information from the collections agency, exactly how the Trump Organization pushed everything over to the inaugural committee. The records show the bill was eventually paid at the direction of Rick Gates. Remember him, the Trump operator who ended up serving time in prison related to the Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. So the D.C. Attorney General got all of this evidence, went back to court to the same judge who had stunned everyone last year by releasing the Trump Organization from the case. People couldn't believe it. Well, guess what? As of the beginning of this year, there was a new judge put onto the case. The local attorney general's request was now left up to that new judge, a different one. It was reassigned to D.C. Superior Court Judge Yvonne Williams, a former NAACP lawyer appointed to the bench by President Barack Obama. Well, Judge Williams this week made her ruling in the case, and no, the Trumps ain't gonna like that ruling either. Sad. As The Hill reports this week, the Trump Organization is being reinstated as a defendant in a lawsuit filed by the D.C. Attorney General against former President Trump's 2017 inaugural committee. The ruling by Judge Yvonne Williams this week reversed an earlier decision by another judge to dismiss the case against the Trump Organization. In a statement to CNN, a spokesperson for the D.C. Attorney General said it was, quote, full steam ahead, noting this case, quote, will now proceed to trial fully intact as it was originally brought. So it took a while, and they wasted a lot of, I guess, their own time and their own money and a lot of the attorney general in D.C.'s time. But the good news is the Trump Organization is back on the hook for whatever this scam was. And we'll find out about it in the days ahead when this trial finally gets underway. But the Trump Organization will not be able to dodge this particular trial and potentially millions of dollars that seem to have disappeared somewhere. And all because the Trump Organization stiffed this hotel of $50,000. They didn't show up. We don't have to pay.
Yeah, they sure are spending a lot of money to have avoided spending that little bit of money.
as if there's some reason that they would want to go to all that effort to get out of that case.
You know, maybe. I don't know. I'm just saying.
So that one, that case has sort of flown under the radar, it seems to me, over the past several months. Everyone's looking at New York, of course. Everyone's looking down at Georgia, Trump's efforts to steal the election in the Peach State. That case is also moving forward, though it is maddeningly slow, but they're looking at racketeering. They're looking at a broad conspiracy, it appears, and the special grand jury that the district attorney down there in Georgia, Fulton County, Georgia, has asked the judge for. She has now been allowed to get it, but they're not even going to meet. I think it's until, I want to say, I hope I'm wrong, I want to say May 2nd. I hope it's actually March 2nd, but actually I think it might be May 2nd. So this is all going to take a while, but it is all moving only in one direction, towards accountability for Donald Trump. So yeah, while the Trump Organization tried to stiff yet another vendor for yet another bill, he and his organization and, yes, his kids are all going to end up paying the price for this one. Nice job, Trumps. You're all so very good at this. More Bradcast is straight ahead today with more bad news, not for Donald Trump in this case, but for a very Trumpy election official and for her state Republican Party. That's straight ahead on the Brad. See, I'm all jacked up because I've been this morning. I woke up, like I said, at dawn, had some coffee, been drinking coffee all day, trying to solve the blog problem. Good luck shutting me up. All right, quick break. We're back with that story and whatever else may happen here on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
I guess he'd rather be in Colorado.
I would.
He'd rather spend his time out where the sky looks like a pearl after rain.
That sounds nice. Are you playing John
Once
Denver because you think I need to calm down? Is that why you're... Because if so, it's working.
Okay, good.
It's working. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Did I mention, by the way, with the server down, did I mention that we don't think there's anything nefarious going on with
No,
with
you did
that?
Not mention
that. I should mention that because I've heard from some people, you know, oh, there's all of these attacks on Ukraine.
That's true. There are. But
computers
that's,
and so forth.
That doesn't seem to be what's going on here.
We do not suspect anything of the kind. It's just bad luck. So, yes. All right. Welcome back to Bradcast. Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. Last week, we covered the arrest. You remember this? The arrest of Tina Peters, the very Trumpy, disgraced Republican county clerk in Mesa County, Colorado, the one who snuck into the secure voting system room in the middle of the night, late at night last year, with someone who was not allowed to be in that room with her, and they turned off the security cameras, and they made unlawful copies of hard drives containing critical election management system software on the county's Dominion voting systems. This is how they were going to catch those nefarious bastards down in Venezuela or China or Cuba or whatever, whoever stole the election for Joe Biden in 2020.
She's just sure of it.
Yeah. So they made these copies of this software, which was bad enough. But then those copies got released to the internets during one of Mike Lindell's crazy, MyPillow guy Mike Lindell's crazy software symposiums to show how the election was stolen from Donald Trump,
which
even though he never showed anything. Yeah. Well, Tina Peters was at that symposium, one of them last summer in South Dakota, and during that symposium, that software that was copied in Mesa County containing the critical proprietary election management system software on the Dominion voting systems was somehow released to the internet. Huh, how did that happen? Well, it caused havoc in the bargain. All over the country, but among other places, right here in California, if you were listening to the broadcast at the time, because it was just before last year's gubernatorial recall election, where those very same systems are used across the state here. Those same Dominion voting systems that are used in Mesa County are used in several counties out here in Colorado, and where copies of that proprietary software would make it much easier for bad guys to figure out how to hack those systems in use for the gubernatorial recall last year, or in any other election, by the way, around the country, because these systems are used all over the country. And by the way, it's just one reason why systems like this should never be used for elections, because in this case, here in California or anywhere else, even if they aren't hacked, the idea that we know that they can be and the difficulty of proving that they were not, well, if you haven't noticed what has happened since 2020, that is the nightmare that I have been warning about for so many years on this program and at BradBlog, that even an election that is not hacked can be made to appear to have been hacked, because it's just so difficult for the public to oversee how these systems actually work. In any event, we talked about this last week because Tina Peters was arrested. In case you forgot or you missed the show, Peters, after having stolen that software last year, she was removed from her elected role as the chief election official in Mesa County, removed by the Democratic now Secretary of State in Colorado. And she's now facing both local and state criminal probes and even federal probes about that software incident. Well, she was arrested last week when she refused to turn over an iPad in a completely separate case. That iPad is believed to include evidence that she videotaped a court hearing of her deputy, who is facing criminal charges after also being removed from her post by the Colorado Secretary of State for her part in that hard drive copying mess. And as Peters was arrested, she put on her best Karen defense to stop the cops from handcuffing a nice, white, bleach blonde Republican, after all.
Let go of me! Let go of me!
Let go of her!
Let go of me!
She's,
let go of me!
She's telling this to cops.
Let go of me!
And she's kicking the cops. You got the idea.
Stop it.
Give me my keys. I want my purse. I am not going to be arrested. That was Tina Peters getting arrested last week. Well, even with all of that, just a few weeks ago, with all of the mess that Peters is facing, she announced that she was going to run for Mesa County Clerk again, even though she was barred from doing the job. And even while she's facing charges and criminal probes, et cetera, et cetera. So that was nuts enough that she was going to run for Mesa County Clerk again. But now, as TPM describes it this week, fresh off her arrest last week, Tina Peters, the Republican clerk of Mesa County, Colorado, who pushed former President Trump's big lie, on Monday announced her bid to become the state's top elections official. Yes, that's right. Now Tina Peters says she is running for Secretary of State in Colorado. She announced her campaign during an appearance on former Trump White House chief strategist Steve Bannon's War Room podcast. I can't believe Spotify has not scooped him up for hundreds of millions of dollars yet. I mean, he's only been indicted how many times before being pardoned by Donald Trump? Anyway, Peters told Bannon that she is running to, quote, restore trust, unquote, and, quote, put an end to government overreach in our election process. Well, I don't know about the government overreach part, but if anyone can restore trust in our election process,
it's the lady who stole the software.
Stole the software, released it to the internet. She said, Colorado deserves a Secretary of State who will stand up to the Biden administration. Why? Why does Colorado deserve? Why does a Secretary of State need to stand up to any administration? And Steve, she said, that's why today I'm announcing that I'm running for Colorado Secretary of State. In October, a Colorado judge barred Peters from overseeing her own county's elections. The judge found that Peters neglected her duties and was, quote, untruthful when she allowed someone who was not a county employee to copy the hard drives of Dominion Voting Systems machines. The local district attorney, state prosecutors, and the FBI are probing whether criminal charges are now warranted in the voting machine breach. Here's how the local NBC affiliate in Denver announced the news this week that, and this can't be good. This cannot be good for any candidate. I mean, I guess, you know, they say any publicity is good publicity.
Maybe.
I don't know if this is the introduction you want to your campaign. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Here was the local Denver news channel announcing the exciting news that Tina Peters is going to be running for Secretary of State.
Colorado's best-known election rigging conspiracy theorist says she's going to run for Secretary of State, the job that oversees Colorado's elections. Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters joins the Republican primary 6 days after she was arrested for scuffling with police officers, executing a search warrant and a felony investigation about whether she lied to a judge. Peters' smiling mugshot is so good it may just make it into her campaign materials. She is currently knee-deep in a couple of different investigations, more than she has knees. The misdemeanor charges for mixing it up with police officers. There's the felony investigation involving lying to the judge. Then there are local and federal investigations into the breach of her security system and for voting systems, where information was then given to conspiracy theorists.
I mean, they're accurately reporting on all of the felony investigations,
right?
That she's undergoing right now.
You would think you were listening to the broadcast there or something. No, that was just the local news guy.
Telling it like it is.
Telling the truth. And it was actually hard to hear all of his descriptions because in the background, she's kicking the police and saying, let me go. Give me my car keys.
It's all on video. It's all fact.
So there is an excellent candidate for office, if I've ever seen one. And I'm sure the state Republican Party is delighted to have her in the contest against the current Democratic Secretary of State Jenna Griswold. By the way, there was, for the last two terms prior to that, there was a Republican Secretary of State there who I wasn't a fan of, but who seemed to be a completely insane person.
Who wasn't under multiple felony investigations either, I don't think.
That we know of. The week is young, Des. Well, maybe. Anyway, maybe the Republican Party is actually not delighted to have Tina Peters running. Axios reports this week, Tina Peters, the Mesa County clerk, arrested after trying to kick police officers and thwart a search warrant. Never a good lead for a story, by the way, about your candidate, who is currently under federal and state investigation for election tampering. Also, not a good lead for a story for an election official who's under investigation for election tampering, announced Monday that she will run for Colorado Secretary of State. Peters' bid for statewide office will create problems for all candidates on the Republican ballot, reports Axios, because it shifts the conversation to conspiracies about the 2020 election and its outcome, a polarizing topic that splits the party and upsets independent voters. If she makes it to the November ballot, which Axios believes is unlikely, quote, that could prove to be disastrous for the GOP ticket, said Republican strategist Ryan Lynch. Now, of course, they're saying, you know, they don't want these 2020 election conspiracists on the ballot, that hurts all Republicans. I am not so sure about that. I don't know if it hurts the Republicans or not, but I'm not so sure that the Republican Party does not want those people on the ballot, because there's a whole lot of them not only getting on the ballot this year, but that are being supported by state Republican parties around the country. In the primary, Peters will face a handful of other Republicans, including Pam Anderson. No, not that Pam Anderson. This one is a former Jefferson County clerk who said Colorado's elections are secure. Well, that's not going to win her the Republican primary. In her announcement, Peter said she is running to, quote, stand up to the Biden administration that wants to run our country in the ground with nationalized elections. So you might think, what the hell is she even talking about, nationalized elections? But that is the way that Republicans have been opposing things like restoring the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which the Supreme Court gutted in 2013, and about restoring minimum requirements for absentee and early voting, et cetera. They describe that as federalizing our elections.
In other words, federalizing or nationalizing our elections is setting a minimum floor for access to the ballot. And states that like to discriminate against certain types of voters don't like that.
Yeah. And that's what and that's how they fought. This is a federalizing our elections or whatever nonsense they're saying. It's just making sure that people have the right to vote wherever they are. Yes, nationally, everyone should have a right to vote if they want to. But the way Tina Peters describes it as weaponizing our elections and targeting political opponents has no place in Colorado, she said. Bobby Gross, her former Republican rival for Mesa County clerk, tells Axios Denver that Peters, quote, has a following, and the investigations have not hurt her image among her audience. A lot of voters are just waiting to see what happens, Gross said in an interview. And I guess Gross is happy because she's not... She's no longer running for Mesa County clerk. Now she's going to run for the top chief election official in the state of Colorado. Now, by the way, we very rarely, if ever, endorse any candidate in any race. We did, I think, only one time for Deborah Bowen when she was running for Secretary of State out here in Colorado. Where am I? Out here in California. Because, you know, years ago, I was the conspiracy theorist for pointing out the vulnerabilities of all of these voting systems. And she was a candidate who wanted to, who came in and said, no, we're going to take these concerns seriously and investigate the machines, make sure they are not vulnerable. The voting machine companies, after all, claim that they are so, that they're completely secure. Well, it turns out she won Secretary of State. She did a massive study of the machines, and every single one of them were unbelievably vulnerable and could be, you know, flipped. Election results could be flipped in a minute or two. And since then, there's been a lot of additional security that's been added. Nonetheless, they're still vulnerable. Anyway, we did endorse Deborah Bowen way back when for that job. I don't know if we endorsed any other candidate since, but we may seriously consider throwing our considerable weight here at the broadcast behind Tina Peters, at least in her bid for the Republican primary this year. We're considering it. Anyway, that should be a fun race to watch. All right, quick break, and we are back with our 13th anniversary Green News Report. Really?
Yeah.
13 years. That's next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
In case folks don't know, the Green News Report started actually more than 13 years ago.
Yes,
I was guest hosting radio show up in San Francisco on a station that was at the time called Green 960, and they didn't have a lot of environmental news. And Desi, you thought, hey, it's called Green 960. Why don't we do some environmental news? And you came on and read some environmental news, some
and you heckled
climate
me.
Change, and I heckled you. And I've sort of described it that way ever since. What's the Green News Report? Well, Desi reads the news. I heckle her. It kind of hasn't changed much in that regard over the past 13 years. even, unfortunately, on dark days like this one, many of our Green News reports over the years have been quite dark. This one included, at least in part, given the grim news that we have to cover day in and day out on the GNR, thanks to Desi Doyen.
But there's also some positive news, too.
If you can get to it, as we'll find out in our latest Green News Report.
This will happen no matter what we do about emissions.
NOAA warns U.S. sea levels to rise 1 foot by 2050, causing profound flooding.
Officials say the flooding began in the evening, over 10 inches of rain in just 3 hours.
Rio hit with deadly torrential rains, floods, and landslides. Plus, good news for breathers. Biden to restore California's clean car standards.
Hey, I'm a breather. That's good news. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It's happening. That comet is arriving in slow motion, and we've got to do something before it strikes.
Here's an idea, Michael Mann. Don't look up. This is your 13th anniversary Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, today, as it turns out, is the Green News Report's 13th anniversary. Happy anniversary to you.
And to you as well.
That said, unfortunately, we start off with some pretty grim, if predictable, news. After 13 years.
Yes, unfortunately. Tragic news in Brazil. Rescue and recovery operations are underway in communities in the mountains above Rio de Janeiro that were hit by 10 inches of rain in just 3 hours on Tuesday. The deluge triggered catastrophic flash floods that caused 49 landslides. As we go to air, more than 90 are confirmed dead, hundreds still missing, and officials expect the death toll will rise.
And all of this, of course, completely predictable.
Yes. Speaking of predictions, here in the U.S., a new NOAA study confirms that U.S. coastal sea levels will rise on average by at least a foot by 2050, bringing higher, more intense storm surges and chronic high tide flooding.
A foot in the next 30 years?
Yes. NOAA scientists warn that America's coastlines will see sea levels rise rapidly over the next 30 years by as much as they did over the last 100 years. That is due to man-made climate change and land subsidence caused by removal of underground oil, gas, and water.
I'd say we just ignore all of these predictions. It's working out great so far.
Major coastal cities, especially along the Gulf and Eastern Seaboard, will be hit with costly floods even on sunny days as much as 10 times more often. In a press conference, NOAA Administrator Dr. Richard Spinrad was blunt.
This will happen no matter what we do about emissions. This report is a wake-up call for the United States, but it's a wake-up call that comes with a silver lining. It provides us with information needed to act now to best position ourselves for the future. It's going to take all of us, government, businesses, academia, community, citizens, to make a difference in the future.
It may be a wake-up call, but America is hitting the snooze button.
However, Penn State climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann on MSNBC explained that climate action can prevent even worse outcomes.
You know, we're committed maybe to a foot of sea level rise here by the middle of the century, but we can prevent meters of sea level rise. So, yeah, some bad stuff is locked in. We're going to need to adapt to that and reduce the suffering that results from that. But at the same time, we can prevent the worst by cutting carbon emissions rapidly.
You know, there are a whole bunch of climate crisis deniers who bought really expensive property on the coast. I hope they don't regret their denial soon.
But some good news. The Biden White House this week unveiled a suite of policies aimed at overhauling and decarbonizing the U.S. industrial sector in order to reduce its climate warming pollution.
Sweet.
The Buy Clean initiative will leverage the federal government's massive purchasing power to generate demand for cleaner steel, aluminum, cement, and other materials, all made in American factories. The Atlantic reports that the administration will act as an investor and consumer, including actually building factories in the U.S. to spur innovation. The federal government is the largest consumer in the world, spending more than $650 billion on products and services every year. Finally, some good news for breathers. The Biden administration is restoring California's special authority to set its own tougher standards, limiting carbon pollution from tailpipes, which had been revoked by the Trump administration. Plus, the Biden EPA will tighten federal pollution standards for heavy trucks and buses, the biggest polluters on the road, for the first time since 2001.
So, the federal government is stealing all our good ideas out here in California. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. And hey, thanks to all of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to maybe help the Green News Report stay on your public airwaves for another 13 years. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun. I got my 45 on so I can rock on.
Rock on, Desi Doyen. Congratulations for 13 years of the Green News Report. I think I should say congratulations. I'm not sure. It seems like I wish we didn't have to do the Green News Report.
Yeah, but somebody's got to talk about this stuff. And, you know, one thing I wanted to follow up on this great news that the Biden administration is going to restore California's special authority to set its own more stringent clean car rules for tailpipe emissions, to clean up air pollution, and to fight climate change. This is really, really important. It's hard to understate the national impact of this particular move. 19 states plus the District of Columbia all follow California's clean car rules. So when this happens, it will help to clean up a lot of pollution.
And as I snarked there, the federal government is actually taking a bunch of the rules that California has put in place, and they're going to try to apply them federally. It has been a fight that has been going on for years, back to the George W. Bush administration, if not earlier. So I'm sure it'll swing back in the other direction next time there's a Republican
maybe,
president.
Maybe, maybe not. We'll Sometimes see. These things change, and they change permanently, like seatbelts.
Yeah, good point. We got to get out, though. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. We hope we made it worth your while. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime at bradblog.com as long as our server is not down. Oh, yeah, while you're there, please consider stopping by bradblog.com/donate. To help say congratulations to Desi Doyen. Anything that comes in this week is all going to actually, who am I kidding?
The new
always does. Is going to, well, that's true. The new server, one or the other. Anyway, bradblog.com/donate. My email address, you can drop me a line. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks and the Twitters, you'll find me at the Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.